Harvey Wasserman's Green Power and Wellness Show, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
We bit that apple and the garden was lost. That was Dar Williams singing along with Pete Seeger, David Burns, and so many other great folks from the Rivertown Kids in Beacon, New York. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman, and today we are going to discuss the health impacts of the Fukushima nuclear accident on the United States, and we're going to get into a very, very controversial, very hotly debated topic, and we're going to segue from there into a much longer discussion of the history of the science around radiation and health, its impacts on human beings and on the planet, and especially, of course, focusing on nuclear power plants, which there are 104 in the United States, about 430 worldwide, although there are a lot less now than there were before the Fukushima accident on March 11, 2011. We're joined by two great guests, true experts, pioneers in the field of radiation and health. One of them is with us right now, Joe Mangano. Joe, are you there?
Nice to be here.
Joe Mangano, it's great to have you here. You are one of the premier researchers on the issue of radiation and health. You've just issued with Jeanette Sherman. Is Jeanette with us yet? Not called in yet, so we're waiting.
Yes,
for
I am.
Oh, you are here. Okay, Jeanette
yes,
Sherman,
I
wonderful
am.
Doctor. Jeanette Sherman, who is the force behind the major study of radiation damage to the health from the Chernobyl accident in 1986. So let's jump right in here. You know, a major piece of the debate on nuclear power for the last 40 years has been the question of radiation and health. How much impact does atomic radiation coming from nuclear power plants have on human beings? Now, Dr. John Goffman, who was the first chief medical officer at the Atomic Energy Commission, later denounced nuclear power, and we'll talk more about this as the show goes on, at premeditated mass murder. And very strong language coming from a man who participated in the Manhattan Project, who pioneered the discoveries of LDL cholesterol, and who was one of the truly great figures in all of nuclear chemistry and medical science. But Joe, can you tell us briefly, or well, not even not so briefly, but start with us, and Jeanette, jump in whatever you like, on the nature of the study that you have just issued and what it tells us and what kind of reaction you've gotten.
Well, the study that we published in December is the first of its kind. It is the first study published in a medical or scientific journal that examines potentially how many casualties occurred from the Fukushima meltdowns last year.
In the United States?
Or anywhere. There really haven't even been such studies in Japan, Harvey.
Right, but your study has focused on the United States.
That's correct.
Okay, and then what you're saying in the study is that people have died, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, that people have already died in the United States because of radiation coming here from Fukushima.
Well, let me just tweak your language just a little bit, and that is we have found, using official statistics from this CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, in the first 14 weeks after Japan fallout arrived here, that there was a spike, a bulge, amounting to somewhere around 14,000 additional deaths or unexpectedly high deaths in the U.S. Whether they were due to radiation or other factors to be seen in future research.
And when did these deaths occur?
These deaths occurred from March 20th to June 25th, or should I say were reported on those days.
Now, did radiation, in fact, come to the United States from Fukushima in that period?
Yes, it most certainly did. There are many maps that followed the movement of the plume from Japan, and while the initial earthquake and tsunami and meltdowns were March 11th, the first of fallout arrived on the Pacific coast just 6 days later, March 17th.
All right, so this is a staggering assertion. Well, there is no doubt. I added a website called nukefree.org, N-U-K-E-F-R-E-E.org, and we really were the only ones posting a steady stream of a wide range of opinion and reportage on Fukushima, and there is no doubt that radiation did reach the United States from Fukushima within about 5 days, if not sooner. And there were reports, official reports and unofficial reports, of radiation going all the way across the United States. It was detected in milk on the East Coast and in Florida. And that one piece of the puzzle is indisputable. There is no doubt, as you no doubt point out in your report. And I have posted your report, by the way, at nukefree.org. The actual, what is the formal title of your report?
It's a really long title.
That's all right. We got time.
Okay. I'll take a deep breath.
All right.
An unexpected mortality increase in the United States follows arrival of the radioactive plume from Fukushima. Is there a correlation?
Okay. That's not so bad.
Okay.
Obviously you're not mincing words. I would have to endorse you're using such a lengthy title because it makes the essence of the report clear. So now that we've established, okay, radiation did come here, what makes you think that the radiation might have caused these additions? Well, then let's get the second piece. You're saying that there were 14,000 unexpected deaths in the United States in this, what is it, three-month time period after Fukushima?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us about the nature of these deaths, and Janet, feel free to jump in anytime, where they might have occurred and what makes them seem suspicious.
Janet, I'm taking an extra turn here, but
no,
have extra turns after. The source of this death data is actually fortunate. You know, only a few months after an incident occurs do we have any sort of data from public health officials on, you know, number of new diseases or deaths. But one exception is from the CDC again.
It's the Centers for Disease Control based in Atlanta.
That's correct. Every week, the CDC publishes on the web a list of reported deaths from 122 U.S. cities that represents somewhere around 25-30% of the U.S. population, which is quite a large sample. And they've been doing this for years. And the deaths are reported not just for all ages, but for each of six age groups and for one cause of death, and that's pneumonia and influenza. And that was the source of our calculations. We find, by the way, that this in the past, that this sample, the trends that were identified from the CDC data were pretty much upheld when the final data came in several years later.
So 14,000 additional deaths out of how many? In that period of time, you noted 14,000 additional deaths.
In those weeks, about 600,000 Americans would have died.
So what is the percentage rise?
Let's see, you're putting me on the spot. So it, like an extra 2 to 3%.
And is this considered statistically significant?
Very much so, because we're talking about 600,000 deaths. That's and 14,000 additional ones. It is highly significant.
Okay. Who peer reviewed this study?
We never know who peer reviews. I mean, it's done blindly, and it was done by the people who were contacted by the journal, which is the International Journal of Health Sciences, out of Hopkins. Now,
Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore.
Johns Hopkins University. Now, you may have been a peer reviewer. I've been peer reviewer for the government for years and for publishers. And the person whose papers are submitted never knows who the peer reviewers are. The government, U.S. government, I was a peer reviewer for EPA and in the past, and for multiple journals and books, and they contact scientists or people in the same field to peer review articles to find out, are they accurate? Do they follow scientific principles? So we don't know who peer reviewed it, but it was peer reviewed.
By experts, I should add.
Yeah.
So your process was, you did this article, you sent it to this journal, and if they had gotten negative peer review, they wouldn't have published it. Is that right?
That's right.
And how long between the time you sent them the article and the time you heard that they had peer reviewed it and that it was approved?
This is one of the faster ones I've ever. This is our 28th, peer-reviewed article at people like me and Janet and some of our colleagues at RPH.
Say that again. How many?
This is our 28th.
28th. The two of you have written 28 articles, and they've been peer-reviewed by this journal in particular.
No. Other journals.
Other journals as well. Yeah. And it's been not just us two, but other colleagues as well. This one is one of the faster ones, Harvey. It was submitted in July and I think accepted in October and published in December. I mean, it was fast because the journal felt it was so important that it needed to be brought to the public's attention.
How many people, did they ever tell you how many people peer reviewed it?
No idea. I mean, that is kept secret from authors. I mean, authors do not know who the peer reviewers are.
Do the peer reviewers know who the authors are?
Yes.
They do?
Actually, good question. I'll take that back. Janet, do you know?
Some of the stuff I get is just the article.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the publishing house or the journal or something. Sometimes I know who the author is, and sometimes they just send you the meat of the article, and you peer review it. And I think the last two I did, I do not know who were the authors were.
Yeah, they're trying to maintain a real blindness here, a true objectivity, Harvey, so that there's no bias because the reviewer knows who the author is or the author knows who the reviewer is and can influence them. That's for years that's been a hallmark of the peer review process, as opposed to Janet and I just writing a report and posting it on the website. This is different. This is the gold standard of medical research.
Wow. And this health journal, what's its history?
Oh, it's been in existence for years and years and years.
Yeah, about 42 years. It's a quarterly. The editor is a gentleman named Dr. Vicente Navarro, who has long been a professor at Johns Hopkins and one of the preeminent figures in the field of public health. When I was a student, a public health student in the late 70s, Navarro was required reading, and it is also governed by a board of directors and a set of peer reviewers with outstanding credentials.
Okay, we are talking with Joe Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman, co-authors of a very controversial study that just issued and peer-reviewed in a scientific journal about making clear that there were 14,000 additional unexpected deaths in the United States in the period after the radiation arrived from Fukushima. And this study has been attacked mercilessly by many supporters of the nuclear power industry and even some opponents. And so we're going to talk about this a bit. Joe Mangano and Dr. Jeanette Sherman, both very well-known, very well-established health researchers and with a long track record in the field. So the next question becomes, we've established that radiation did, and there's no doubt, arrive in the United States from Fukushima within 5 or 6 days of the accident, of the disaster. We have also established, according to your analysis of data from the Centers for Disease Control, a federal agency, that there was an anomalous 14,000-person death rise in the death rate in the 3 months or so after the radiation arrived. How do you then make the connection between the radiation and the additional deaths?
Well, one of the ways we make it is this was a finding, certainly after Chernobyl. The book, Chernobyl, Consequences of Catastrophe for People and the Environment. It was published in December of 2009 by the New York Academy of Sciences. Now, the authors of that book assembled some 5,000 articles from generally from the Russian, Belarus, and Ukrainian literature of people who were on the ground and saw what was going on. And they also found excess deaths after, immediately after Chernobyl. We know that the Earth turns, and as the Earth turns, the plume becomes dispersed over the hemisphere where the releases are, whether it was Chernobyl or Fukushima. So we know that the that Chernobyl went around the northern hemisphere, and we know that Fukushima has gone around the northern hemisphere.
Well, how do we know that? Has it circled the globe?
Well, of course.
What's the story with the Fukushima fallout?
Well, I mean, it's still those four reactors haven't yet stopped releasing radioisotopes. I mean, they're still releasing these into the air and water, and as the Earth turns, it picks these up. I mean, the Earth turns underneath the air, and the air is dispersed and precipitates out as rain and snow.
So, have there been measurements indicating? I remember during Fukushima. During Chernobyl, there were very clear measurements showing the cloud circling the globe at least twice. Have we had a similar situation with Fukushima?
Well, we know that it's still falling out. The latest data that I'm seeing is that there are increased levels of radioactive iodine being measured in the United States. But one of the problems here is EPA and its great wisdom was measuring radioactive fallout on a weekly basis after Fukushima happened. And then, in their great wisdom, they decided that quarterly was plenty good enough. And now we learn that the head of the one of the agencies at EPA is going to retire, and he's saying, "Well, don't worry about anything."
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Don't worry about anything?
Pat, I think, Janet, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the meaning of that is the EPA believes that the levels that they detected of radiation in the United States were, quote, too low to harm any human beings, which has really been chapter and verse of what American health officials have contended since the very beginning of the atomic era. Below a certain level, which is arbitrarily set, radiation can harm you, which is it's an assumption. It's a dangerous assumption. It's an irresponsible assumption, and it's an assumption that flies in the face of many, many scientific studies over the decades.
All
radiation is harmful.
We will get to that. That's a critical assertion, and I'm going to agree with you, of course, that I did co-author a book which is free on the Internet called Killing Our Own with the great Robert Alvarez and Norman Solomon, now a candidate for Congress in Marin County, and Eleanor Walters, and in 1982 we pointed out, mostly on Bob's research, Robert Alvarez, that the foundation of the alleged science on what's a safe dose of radiation is completely nonsensical. It was devised, almost manufactured, it was manufactured after the bombing, 5 years after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, based on computer models of fallout that was never measured, and very, very dubious epidemiological evidence, and they came up with a number that was allegedly a safe dose and then applied it to the nuclear power industry, which has never been proven safe. So we'll deal with that in a bit. But to stay focused here on your Fukushima study, what has been the reaction to your assertion that radiation from Fukushima has killed 14,000 Americans?
It's not an assertion. These are data based on U.S. government. This is a paper based on U.S. governmental data. We did not create any of this data. This is from the EPA and the CDC. And we've gotten support from some groups. We've gotten attacked by other groups. We've had very nasty ad hominem attacks on us rather than sticking to the science or somebody saying to you, well, I don't agree with these numbers or that numbers. It has been obviously some of them, because the language is so same from one criticism to another, that there is undoubtedly coordination by the pro-nuclear people in the background.
So who has, let's start with the good stuff. Who supported you?
I think, Harvey, you're about media report number 60 in less than a month. The great majority of which are either objective in their reporting or supportive.
I remember, with all due respect, I remember when the report came out that you guys got, the report got quite a bit of very conventional mainstream coverage. In other words, McClatchy and the AP, many of the news services merely covered the fact that the study had been published and made this assertion. And you know, we take that as positive coverage because your message was just reported as news.
Oh, yes. And again, I would say if I had to count them all up, that the great majority have been either objective or positive. There are however, some that have taken exception with our methods and our findings and have spared no harsh language in trying to discredit it. However, my simple response to that is you can yell all you want that Fukushima is the safest thing in the world, but we still have this spike, this bulge of 14,000 deaths, and no one knows why it happened. And to just scratch Fukushima off the list is, again, a very irresponsible way to conduct health research.
Yeah, well, we like the fact that the coverage has been positive and that the word has gotten out there. So, who now? What is the substance of the negative coverage? What are people saying negative that you have had to answer?
Jenny, you want me to start? You can
go
add
ahead,
if you
sir.
Want. I mean, the tip speaks are things like, you know, this is politically based science, it's biased, and again, the big one being levels just couldn't possibly hurt people. They're just too low, which is, again, a ludicrous assertion. Like saying that five cigarettes or fewer a day won't do anything to you. We won't do any studies to prove it, but we'll just make that assertion. They're really the opponents are really scrambling here to discredit this, but the data are quite powerful. I think it would be, anybody with any responsibility at all would have to say, this raises a red flag. We need to, embark on some good research now, and not just in the U.S., but in many countries.
And we need, what we really need is transparency. We need for the government to be collecting data and publishing it online so people can see it. The most recent thing that's quite disturbing is the whole issue of increase in thyroid cancer in the United States. Now, the question is, we knew that was one of the things that happened and was most apparent after Fukushima. And we have iodine-131 and 129 being released and measured in various places. And, of course, there's going to be increased thyroid disease, not just thyroid cancer, but hypothyroid and hyperthyroid, because these isotopes are taken up in food and wind up in the food supply, and particularly children. We're going to see this.
Well, what makes you so sure?
Well,
it happened in Chernobyl.
Unless we cancel the rules of biology and chemistry, which I don't think is going to happen, Isotopes like iodine are going to be in the food supply if they're falling out of, in the precipitation, and they're, you know, if they're being measured in the water and the food supply.
Okay, so
we know that,
iodine
goes to the thyroid gland. We know that strontium goes to the bones and teeth, and we know that cesium-137, which is also being released from Fukushima, goes to all the soft tissues of the body, including the pancreas and the breast and other and muscles. So we will have to cancel the rules of biology and chemistry for this not to happen.
Well, of course, the Japanese government has been trying to do that. The so-called allowable doses from Fukushima continue to rise as the fallout continues to fall. Now, in terms of the killing agents of the radiation, it's been my assumption that it's the iodine that initially causes the problems because the thyroid is so quickly vulnerable. And one question I have about your data, did you notice a specific impact on stillbirth malformations, spontaneous abortions, and early childhood deaths or quick infant deaths?
No data yet, with the exception of all the age groups, we found that the infants under 1 year old had the greatest spike of any other age group in those weeks after Fukushima, which fits the scientific knowledge that the most vulnerable humans are the very young, the fetus, the infant, the young child.
And
can you describe the mechanism by which that happens with radioactive fallout? I think many of our listeners would.
Well, the unborn, you know, are small. Obviously, you know, we're talking 5 to 9 pounds before a child is born. So a dosage is proportionally larger for that small-sized person. Number one, most babies are born with incomplete detoxification mechanisms. They have, and their immune systems are not fully developed. And then you asked about stillbirths. Stillbirths are usually not, a stillbirth may be counted if the child is breathing. Usually they're then counted as a stillbirth or as a infant death, but a miscarriage is probably not counted in any of the statistics. A woman goes in at 8 months and has a birth and the child does not live. It may not be counted in the statistics at all. We did find in Chernobyl that there was an increase in stillbirths and certainly in malformations. Now, a child born with a malformation may also not be coded on the birth certificate. We don't know. If a child is born, it looks okay, and then 3 days later you discover the child has a heart defect and requires surgery, that won't be on the birth certificate.
Okay.
And Harvey, you know, I want to encourage Janet to take a breath and continue, not just about the infants, but about the other end of the age spectrum, the very elderly, especially the ill elderly, and especially as in the one disease that caused a death that we found to really jump, and that was pneumonia. How can they, you know, possibly be susceptible in a short period of time after exposure?
Well, you know, the elderly have had exposures throughout their lives to various, you know, environmental effects, whether it's their workplace or the toxins or radiation or living near a toxic dump site or whatever it is. The elderly have compromised immune systems. And let's say a person has been receiving chemotherapy for a prostatic cancer or a breast cancer or something else. It doesn't take much to push that person over the edge. And if that person should get a pneumonia, they are not as easily treated as a younger, healthier person.
Okay, we are talking with Dr. Jeanette Sherman and Joe Mangano, who have issued a very damning study linking 14,000 additional deaths in the United States to fallout from Fukushima. And the report was very widely covered in the mainstream media, in the corporate media. I was actually quite surprised. to see it and pleased, but and has since, of course, been vehemently attacked by the nuclear power industry. I, by way of disclosure, I am co-author of a book called Killing Our Own, The Disaster of America's Experience with Atomic Radiation, which is at which is free on the Internet. We're going to take a short break. Joe and Jeanette, I hope you can stay with us, please. And we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. We'll be right back to talk about Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, and other radioactive fallout right after this.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve?
Yes, we did evolve from what we conceived, and unfortunately we're now threatening that evolution. We are back with the Green Power Wellness Show. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're talking about the American death toll, the U.S. death toll from radiation from Fukushima. Radiation speed was detected on the west coast of the United States within 4 or 5 days after the Fukushima disaster, and has been with us ever since. Of course, a huge quantity of radiation from Fukushima has been pouring into the oceans, and we don't know in the long term what kind of health fallout that's going to have, but it certainly isn't good. We've been seeing reports, which I've been posting at www.nukefree.org, indicating that seafood in the Pacific has been irradiated, may not be safe. Of course, the U.S. government, in its infinite wisdom, has ceased its serious monitoring of a lot of this seafood, so we're not going to get any clear answers except what they will say, and I can tell you exactly what the nuclear power industry will say. They will say there is no evidence that there's any harm done from Fukushima. But what Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman have come up with is a very compelling argument, got major coverage even in the corporate media, showing that there were 14,000 unexpected deaths in the United States in the months after Fukushima, and clearly linking that to the fallout from Fukushima. Jeanette, you are largely responsible for the publication of another very controversial study indicating some 985,000 deaths from Chernobyl. Can you tell us about that study, please? And Joe, chime in whenever you like.
I don't want to criticize you, but I hate the word controversial because this was used for years and years and years to say that the findings about tobacco was controversial, and then we found that the tobacco industry was lying through their teeth. So controversial.
Okay, you can do that. I mean, there's no doubt that it is controversial, but nonetheless, let's talk about it.
Well,
what do you say now about the death toll from Chernobyl and how it relates to Fukushima?
Well, the overwhelming data that is presented in the book on Chernobyl that was written by Alexei Yablokov, who was head of the Russian Academy of Sciences and was a consultant to President Yeltsin and Gorbachev. I mean, he's not exactly a minor player in the world. He himself has published over 400 articles and 22 books. And he assembled, along with Vasily Nestorenko and Alexei Nestorenko, they assembled the data from well over 5,000 studies in this book about what happened, particularly in Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. Now, Vasily Nestorenko was director of the Nuclear Energy Institute of the Belarus Academy of Sciences. He was not exactly a minor player. When Chernobyl happened, he requisitioned a helicopter and flew over the reactor and was one of the few people to actually collect data on as it was exploding.
And what happened to him?
Sadly, he died 2 years ago, probably as a result of the damage to him that he received after that event. Now, he and his organization did over 340,000 food measurements of cesium-137 and 134 in food. And they tested over 290,000 children with whole body counters to determine the levels of radiation in those children. I mean, these data are not exactly, minor studies. Now, they, along with Yuri Bandashevsky, who was the director of the medical institute in Gomel, Belarus. He was a professor of anatomy, and he tested kids, the C-37 in children and in the food supply. He'd earlier done studies on animals with cesium-137, and he found that he was doing autopsies on these children. They had the same kind of damage to their hearts and eyes that that the test animals had found. Now, for his work, his absolutely great work, and he criticized the government for not protecting children, he was arrested in 2001 for allegedly taking bribes from students. Now, most of us know how much money students have. And he was finally... he was sentenced to 8 years in prison, but he was finally paroled in 2005. He now works outside of the old Soviet Union. Now, these people who provided this information were on the ground. I hate the term boots on the ground, but these were people who saw what was going on as Chernobyl was occurring. So the data are extremely strong, and it comes from multiple sources, including from, countries such as England, Germany, France, Greece, Italy, Israel, et cetera. This is not just the old Soviet Union.
So essentially then what you're saying is that the official line that 31 or a couple thousand people maybe died at Chernobyl, you're saying that as of the mid-2000s, the first middle of the first decade of the year of the new millennium, almost a million people died from Chernobyl.
That's what the data shows. Now, we know, for instance, that over 830,000, that's 830,000 healthy men and women, generally between the ages of 30 and 39, were recruited to work as, quote, liquidators, unquote, to shut down the Chernobyl reactor.
Right. Now, I actually met many of them. I spoke in the city of Kaliningrad in 1996, 10 years after the accident. I met a lot of them. They were very reminiscent. They really reminded me of the Vietnam vets against the war. They were really ferocious, angry, and very well organized. And, of course, they had no doubts that their health had been destroyed by radiation from Chernobyl.
Yeah, but by 2005, 15% or 125,000 had already died. And the main causes of deaths were circulatory blood diseases and malignancy. They had greater numbers of stomach and thyroid cancers than the general population. And about 55% of the early workers, the ones who worked right after the Chernobyl happened, about 55% of those deaths were due to heart disease.
But cancer didn't surface yet.
Well, no, there was greater numbers of stomach, thyroid, and total cancer. But we know, for instance, women who have a radiation to their chest for breast cancer develop heart disease. But what happened with Chernobyl is a lot of the isotopes that were released, many of these were inhaled and carried by the bloodstream to the in the lining of vessels and damaged the vessels, which was described by autopsy findings and published in this book. We also know that the about 20% of the children born to the liquidators had generally poor health, an increase in congenital birth defects, thyroid cancer, and central nervous system problems.
Well, this is quite staggering. Of course, that report has been widely attacked too, and yet the data on all this is pretty compelling. Let's back up one more time to Three Mile Island. I did a lot of work at Three Mile Island. I went in there in the year after the accident. To my knowledge, I was the only reporter stupid enough to sit near the reactor a year later. And during the time I was there, there were krypton gas releases. And there was actually a cartoon in the local paper showing Superman falling out of the sky. But nonetheless, we asserted in the book Killing Our Own that the infant death rate in the city of Harrisburg tripled in the 3 months after the accident. Now, you two were with Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman, the health researchers, who issued a study on a 14,000 death increase in the United States following the arrival of radiation from Fukushima. Have you two done any work on Three Mile Island, and could you correlate any of the deaths or alleged deaths from radiation Three Mile Island with what happened at Chernobyl and Fukushima?
Yes, I have published an article on Three Mile, but even better than that, I will cite you the 1990 paper, which is the first one looking at cancer rates near Three Mile, and it was only published 12 years after the accident, by which time dozens of papers looking at the stress effects from Three Mile had been published. Very simply, in the 5 years after the accident, among people living within 10 miles of Three Mile Island, the number of cancers jumped 64%. This was reported in an article by a group from Columbia University who then went on to say that even though this is a big jump, it wasn't due to the radiation from the nuclear accident, and it was probably due to stress. Right? That is, that's right in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Later on, it was combated by a group from University of North Carolina, and a big fight broke out. But I would say that's probably one of the more powerful pieces of info from Three Mile.
I'd like to add something to that. We talk about, well, it's due to stress and radiophobia and all this kind of thing. Well, of all these systems studied at Chernobyl, and not all were, but wild and domestic animals, fish, birds, plants, fungi, bacteria, and viruses, all of them had changes without exception. Now, you can't say that these creatures are radiophobic or it's because they're perceiving stress.
Well, I think the dogs were out reading the newspapers and got really freaked out, frankly. I mean, I did part of our book, Killing Our Own, we encountered a major study done by the Baltimore News American, which no longer exists, maybe for some...
Which one, please? I couldn't hear you.
Baltimore News American.
Yeah.
It sent three reporters into TMI area a year after the accident, or less than that, actually, and they came up with huge reports from farmers about livestock just dropping dead. And I actually encountered a dog born right across the river from Three Mile Island. It actually was on the same side of the river in Middletown that had been born with no eyes. And there were cats that were born without a sense of balance. And the Baltimore News American did a very clear conclusion that the wildlife and the farm animals have been deeply affected by radiation from Three Mile Island. And, of course, this couldn't have to do with any stress unless they were always hearing a radio in a kind of an animal farm mode. I don't know. So the 1991 study you cited, Joe, where was this published and what exactly did it say about radiation from Three Mile Island?
Yeah, there were two of them. One was the American Journal of Epidemiology, the other American Journal of Public Health. And
who are the authors of those?
The main author was Dr. Maureen Hatch of Columbia University, working with a team from Columbia.
As I recall, her study very carefully said there was no definitive impact that they could prove.
That's right.
But the numbers said something else, correct?
Well, yeah, the numbers alone should have put up a red flag saying, how could you, this is a wildly high jump in cancers just 5 years later, 64%. But they just dusted it off. And then a few years later, a group from UNC, led by Dr. Stephen Wing, looked at the same data and came to the opposite conclusion. They said, no, there is a link between the radiation from the meltdown, and cancers. And again, literally a fight broke out in the medical literature. The Columbia Group fired back with their belief, and UNC fired back with their belief, and this went back and forth.
Right, and this is the UNC commenting on Columbia's own data.
Yes,
and
Columbia denying
that their data showed a health problem, and UNC saying yes, it does.
That's exactly.
We have a caller on the line. I believe it's Rhonda. Can we take the call, Matt?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Harvey. It's Rhonda from Florida.
Florida. All right.
Yeah. Hey. I really appreciate this paper, and I was going to at first to ask a question about the perhaps erroneously low death toll in Fukushima as a result of the immediate death toll from the tsunami, but now I realize that you're just talking about U.S. deaths, so I'm sorry. I wanted to know.
Now, are you saying that the published death toll from the tsunami has been used as a cover-up for radiation problems at Fukushima? Is that what you're kind of trying to say?
Well, I was just wondering if perhaps that number would be illuminating.
Jeanette, got anything to say about that?
All I know is something around 28,000 deaths from the earthquake and tsunami. I mean,
but we're getting no data on deaths, you know, around Fukushima itself. We don't know what's happening with the deaths particularly of children for instance, Tokyo and other places. There's practically no information.
Yeah, there's not an accident there. Rhonda, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no. The other thing I wanted to know, if you could address all three of you, perhaps, is how we can best use this report, because the nuclear industry is not slowing down. We thought that an accident would wake everybody up and it would shut down this crusade, but it hasn't. So share this report with our legislators. What do you recommend we do?
Joe, Jeanette, you want to comment on that?
I'll take a shot first, and then you can add, Janet. My feeling is that, you know, in this hour we've talked, boy, at least 90% of the time about meltdowns. And yes, meltdowns are bad. They're catastrophic. They harm many, many people. Fukushima, Chernobyl, Three Mile Island. We have to remember that in this country, even though the meltdown was in Japan, the doses that we received here were much less than in Japan, maybe thousands of times less. And that brings up the point of the 104 nuclear power reactors that are still operating in the United States, where 116 million Americans live within 50 miles of one of these reactors. Every single day, these reactors emit the same radioactive mix that we find in meltdowns, and the same mix of toxic chemicals from the atomic bomb explosions years ago. You know, in relatively small amounts, but they're coming out day after day, getting into our bodies by breathing and in the food chain. So really, Fukushima has a lesson, not just for meltdowns, but for what do we do with our aging crop of nuclear reactors that are emitting on a regular basis. Janet, you want to?
Well, at least 43 of the 104 reactors in the United States are the same construction as the Fukushima reactors that melted down. Now, you're in Florida, and the question, you have two reactors down there, and the question is, what's the data on the health statistics around those reactors? And I think it's essential that you get this information out to your fellow residents and see about getting these things closed down, because it's just a matter of time before we have another catastrophe, and it could happen in the United States. In April of this year, we had an earthquake here in Virginia, absolutely unprecedented, and it shut down the reactor at Lake Anna. Now, of the four diesel generators that are supposed to keep the reactor going, only three of them worked. So, you know, it's just a matter of time before we have the same thing happening here.
Right. And I want to say that, you know, one thing, and we're getting near the end of the hour. Jill Mangano, Rhonda, do you have anything to add real quick?
No, that's it. That's just wanted to, you know, get the, you know, get marching.
Okay. Well, Rhonda, you, by way of disclosure, you and I know each other. You're a great activist. Thank you so much for calling. And keep up. We are, Joe and Jeanette, if, you know, we barely scratched the surface of this because I did want to get into the history of this so-called science behind radiation exposure. I want to talk about John Goffman. If you two could come back next week at the same time to the Progressive Radio Network with me on the Green Power and Wellness Show, I'd really appreciate it. We've got Michael Marriott coming in to talk about the loan guarantee program that we want to kill. But I'd like to do another half hour with the two of you on this topic. If you can make it, just let me know. One of the things I want to talk about at the end here is the question of whose burden it is to prove whether or not these accidents are having an impact. And my feeling is that nuclear power is introduced to the world and never proven safe. You know, the opponents of green energy, the supporters of nuclear power, continually tell us that we have not proven the nuclear power is dangerous, which I disagree with. But nonetheless, it begs the question, why is it our burden to prove this technology is dangerous when, in fact, it's a product and they really have the burden of proof to show it's safe? What do you think about that?
In public health schools, there's something taught called the precautionary principle, which basically states that when you are using some sort of a potentially harmful substance, it is the responsibility of the maker or the user of this substance to prove safety, like you said. In the atomic age, it's been just the opposite. The makers and the users have declared it safe, have done no study showing it's safe, and then play defense and oppose any studies that suggest they are harming people. It is, you know, there's a big difference between academia and the real world, and this is certainly one because this defies all good public health practice.
Well, I'll take it one step further, I think. This is not a scientific debate. This is a political and economic force. And the money and the personnel is on the side of the nuclear industry and the U.S. government and the IAEA and Atomic Energy.
The International Atomic Energy Agency.
Yeah.
That's right.
And they have the money and they have the personnel. And it's very difficult to get the science out to anybody because of the political and economic realities.
Just like tobacco.
Exactly.
Except that tobacco, at least you had a choice if you're going to smoke tobacco or not. And as you recall, the great John Goffman, who was a pioneer of nuclear power in the first place, later called nuclear power premeditated mass murder.
I agree with him. Now, I met John Goffman when I worked for the Atomic Energy Commission in 1952 at the University of California. I've been at this for a long time.
Wait a minute. You worked at the Atomic Energy Commission in 1952?
I did, yes, sir. And
are a national treasure.
I'm old. And we knew then what radioactive isotopes did, and we still know what radioisotopes do. So it's not a mystery. This is basic biology, and we're ignoring it.
Well, we're ignoring it. We're not ignoring it, but the nuclear power industry is ignoring it.
No, the public is ignoring it.
Well, it sounds like Pete's coming at us. It's time we got to go. This was a really fast hour. You guys are wonderful guests. I hope you can join me next week to pursue this conversation on the impact of radiation and health. Joe Mangano and Jeanette Sherman, co-authors of a devastating new study showing that 14,000 Americans may well have been killed by radiation from Fukushima. We will be back next week with the Green Power and Wellness Show with Michael Marriott from the Nuclear Information Resource Service, and hopefully Joe and Jeanette, if you can join us then. We will see you. Until next week, this is Harvey Wasserman, and no nukes, and we'll see you in Solartopia.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't
know.